Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Monica, who is here to speak with us about her experience of participating in the at-home working meditation retreat. Welcome, Monica.
Hi, Jen. Hi, Michael.
Hey, thanks for being here.
Thanks for asking.
So, yeah, we have a... So this is actually an opportunity we used to do quite a bit in the past, and we hadn't done one for quite some time, and then offered one earlier this year, and we have another one coming up. So we thought it would be fun to hear from someone who had the direct experience so that folks who might be considering signing up could hear what it's all about. So thanks for being with us to be here to share your experience.
Sure.
So maybe we could start by just kind of looking a little bit at the structure of the day and how that works. What is an at-home working meditation retreat?
So do you want me to say what it was?
Yeah, so just kind of walk through, you know, the not the nitty-gritty, but sort of the general components of how that works.
Yeah, it was my first one, and I don't know if there's been offered since I've been in Sangha, but I was excited to sign up. And I believe there was like a initial group call with kind of the layout of the day, and then a period of working meditation, and then coming back together for a group call, and maybe a sit. I actually don't remember. And then in the second period of working meditation, and then a final group call.
Yeah, exactly. You got it exactly. Yep. So getting to be, you know, wherever you are in your home, and then there are throughout the day several opportunities to come together with other folks during the workshop to connect. And so what was your experience of participating? Yeah.
Well, I was surprised at how much it felt like the monastery. Like, it was really like, I think the biggest experience was really feeling like I was on retreat. I had the luxury of being in the house by myself. And it really felt like I was on a retreat. Like, I really felt supported by the structure. It didn't occur to me not to do the work during the work retreat. You know, there was no distraction.
No one's going to know.
Yeah, like it didn't even occur to me to, you know, not follow the schedule.
Yeah.
And it just really brought a different quality to Saturday chores. And it was very pleasant and very relaxing. And I got a lot done, and it just was really, like, more amazing than I would have believed it could be, really.
And that's so fun, isn't it? Because I just love that image of, gosh, it never occurred to me that, right, because there's no hidden camera in your living room.
Yeah.
Making sure, now, Monica, get back to work, right? So just finding that just that structure of we're all doing this together, even though the actual, you know, execution, if you will, of whatever it is that each person chooses to do in their own home is solo, but just that support of doing it together, it sounds like really gave you that experience of feeling like you're on retreat, doing working meditation on retreat.
Yeah, I mean, it really shifted just the quality of not really trying to get anything finished or not feeling like any kind of, you know, urgency or pressure to get a certain amount of work done. It's just like, okay, I'm just going to do working meditation and work for this amount of time. And it so happened that, you know, I really finished the job that I had set out to do, and it really did end up being the perfect amount of time, but I didn't feel like I was trying to fit a certain amount of tasks into the time frame. But it just, it was really great.
And I feel like I hear so many things in that I know has been my experience with those days, and I've heard lots of other folks refer to it that two things. So it mirrors for us what our process tends to be, you know, so Saturday chores, I'm going to get this done, there's kind of a push that happens, And there can be like a rushing and a conditioned process around all of that. And so in a day like this, it gets mirrored that, oh, that's what usually happens. And then there's somehow that space to step out of that. And because it's a retreat day, so it sounds like the focus is on the practice of it, the how of it, the retreat aspect of it. So then that, by definition, at least gives us the option, the space, to step away from it being about the content. And then we get to actually do it in the same way, you know, a lot of folks have the experience of doing working meditation at the monastery, where it's just, here's the task, and, you know, there's nothing invested in getting it done. Or there is, and then I get to see that, right? But there's no expectation, at least from the monastery, that, you know, I have to get any particular thing done. And being able to have that attitude of mind in your own home, which I project is so helpful, because then you can keep practicing having that all the time.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think I've said this a few times, but, like, I just remember the first time being in the kitchen at the monastery and, like, having the bell ring and then it was finished. And I was like, but wait. You know, like, just this idea that it's over because the bell rings, not because you know, and just that urge to, like, but let me just wipe this last counter kind of thing. So, I don't know. I still kind of trip out at that that's possible. And it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge, isn't it? Yeah.
And the other thing that I would say about it is that, you know, I pick something, like, I actually really like to do chores. I love chores. I love cleaning. I love, like, it's not really drudgery, but there are things that feel kind of big. So I pick cleaning out the garage because I would be really happy to get it done, but it feels a little bit overwhelming. So there can be some procrastination a little bit. So it's kind of like I picked something that I needed, like, a little support to do, but that would be really fun to do too. And I don't know. I don't know what people pick. Anything, I guess, but.
Well, yes, exactly. But, you know, what I hear in that's so great is that you pick something where you knew you needed the support. So, okay, I'm going to have the support, so I'm going to take advantage of this. Choose something where I could use a little extra support. But it sounds like you also didn't make it into a contest by choosing this thing that I hate doing and I don't want to do,
right.
That sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and, I love that.
Yeah, so it was really fun. It was really fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that occurs to me as you say that is that, you know, we have another one in August, and I think there may be another one in the fall. Not sure. But at any rate, you know, if one is going to sign up, someone's going to sign up for more than one, you know, you could each time look to see, okay, sort of what aspect of it do I want to practice with this time? You know, maybe another time I choose something that's, you know, challenging and frustrating for me, and I get the support around that. And another time I choose something, as you say, that feels like, you know, fun, but a little overwhelming, and so I choose to get the support around that, or whatever it is, but each time we really get to consciously choose. And then I think that point that you're making, where because it's happening in a retreat setting, and it's in my own home, which I think is a big piece of it. You know, it's one thing to be working meditation at the monastery, but in my own house, that's so transferable to my day-to-day life.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There is something really special about having it in the home and having that, like you say, just, oh, this, I can do this every Saturday or whenever I want to do it, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I remember I used to play with it before I lived at the monastery of put tasks in a hat and then have the, quote, work director pull the task out of the hat and sort of, you know, okay, this is the task, you know, in my case, Jen, please work on, you know, cleaning the bathrooms this afternoon, you know, whatever it is. But I think that's a piece of it, is making it impersonal, because that can be the big difference between, quote, my house and the monastery. At the monastery, there can just, at least, you know, there's a better shot at, there's this period of time, I'm taking care, you know, this is meditation, and I'm, you know, using my hands to do a task and all of that. It's not personal. When it's at my house and it's my thing and my to-do list, it can be much more challenging to not take it personally. And so to apply that process to it is so helpful.
Yeah, I was thinking about like just choosing the thing as part of the retreat, like, oh, and so, and I find myself sometimes, what am I going to do for the next working meeting? You know, sometimes I'm just thinking like, what would be a good project? But it would be fun to just like put a list of, like put a bunch of things and just pick something out that this is the one you're going to do for the retreat. Yeah. Like you said, just put, you know, oh, I need these five things done in my house. I'm just going to put them all in a hat and pick it out. And that's the one I'm going to do with the retreat. So there is that element of just surprise, and it's not super personal because I'm not really choosing. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and what I just saw, yeah, exactly. What I saw when you said that was, I would just bet that there will be such a workshop in that, right? Because it's like, oh, I didn't want that one. I actually wanted, but it's like that place where we don't actually know that until we pick the one we don't want, right? And so to watch the process around that, and yeah, it's so fun. It's kind of endless what you can see with it.
Yeah. So I haven't signed up for the next one, but I'm. This is reminding me to do it, and I'm reminding me how much fun it was. So, thank you for that.
Yeah, good. And thank you. Yeah, thanks for being here and sharing your experience. Was there anything else you wanted to add in before we end?
Yeah. Just if you haven't done it, it's definitely more fun than it sounds.
Exactly. That's such a good, I love that. Yeah, I love that was your early on your comment of, wow, it's way more transformative. I forget what word you used, but than I would have imagined, you know.
Yeah, highly recommend it.
Yeah, so fun. Well, thanks for being with us, Monica.
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Best show. Bye-bye. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you to start the show.
Wonderful. Thank you, Monica, and thank you, Jen. And good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by, surprise, Jen from the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Jen.
Thank you, Michael. Nice to be here.
Great. And I loved that conversation, and what I got from it was the ability to, you know, given the structure and given somebody facilitating and guiding me, that I can drop into the mindset of the monastery, and here's what I'm working on now, and okay, then I have a group call again in an hour, and then follow the schedule.
Exactly. It's really, actually, when you say that, that reminds me of another piece of it, because we were looking at this. We just finished a There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat this last Saturday. And in the final group, someone was talking about being surprised at how supportive the structure was, sort of anticipating that the structure might not feel so supportive. Because, you know, I think often we think of structures as being confining. And to realize that, you know, structures that support the heart are so freeing. They just free us up so much.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that kind, compassionate schedule and stopping working in the kitchen when the bell rings.
That's such a good image, Yeah,
and not having the opportunity to just one more thing and just one more thing, and it's great.
Yeah, because what we talk about with that, you know, that being the metaphor for the big bell, right? So when the final bell rings in my life, you know, it's... chances are good. It's not going to, well, let me just finish wiping this counter, or let me just, that's it. You know, big bell rings, it's over. So we're practicing for how we want to be in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Wonderful. And Jen, I have announcements here.
Super.
The powerful There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat offers foundational work in going beyond self-hate that is challenging, joyous, scary, and loving, and among the most important work you will ever do. Retreats are coming up in August and in October.
And please come join us. It's so much fun. It is all of those things you just named. Incredibly challenging.
Yeah.
There's so much to it, and it is so much fun. I just absolutely love that retreat.
Great. Yeah, don't forget the fun.
Exactly.
Participants in the Mornings with the Mentor group coaching program will create recordings with the mentor to support intentions for the day and for life. Don't miss the opportunity to spend time each morning with someone who loves you unconditionally. The four-week coaching program starts August 7th. And as Monica and Jen were just talking about, bring conscious, compassionate awareness to your Saturday tasks or any project you choose at an at-home working meditation retreat on August 24th. The day includes exercises, facilitated virtual discussions, mindful eating, and designated work periods. The Family Karma Retreat in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania is not an exploration of childhood trauma or family dynamics from a content perspective, but rather an investigation of the ego, of the story of me. Through this exploration, we will be able to see the many ways that story is still dominating us today, and we'll practice the tools that enable us to transcend ego's control. This retreat, September 2nd through 7th, includes yoga, meditation, and guidance with Sherry.
Such a great pairing, especially for folks who are in the year-long retreat. It just goes so well with that process.
Yes, yes. And for these and other opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders for today's show. If you'd like to make a show and talk with Jen today, please press star 6 and then 1. And a conversation that's about 5 minutes in length and on one topic is really helpful. Okay, Jen, I think that covers it. You ready?
Ready? I'm ready.
Okay, here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi. My name is Bob, and hi, Jen. Hi, Michael. And I was just on the retreat that the Nothing Wrong With You retreat that ended this last weekend.
That we were just talking about. Hey, Bob. Nice to hear your voice.
Hey, it's great to be talking with you again. So much easier to be talking to them. So much happier to be here talking with you now than I was thinking about this call 2 minutes ago.
Very good. Very good. Say more.
It's funny because, you know, I signed up to talk, and there are things I wanted to talk about, but it's funny the resistance that came up this afternoon, especially over the last half hour, just, oh, my gosh, you know, you're going to make, you know, the voices. You're going to make a fool of yourself. What do you have to say? They're just on and on and on, like they do.
It's just so huge. We're all so used to what you're saying, you know, that happens. But to realize, to get present to the impact that has on our lives, because, of course, what's supposed to happen is that's so hideous, that experience of that, you know, you're going to make a fool of yourself and you're going to, but what we're supposed to do is go, you know what, yeah, that's right, I'm not going to call in. Because it would be so easy not to, right? It would be so easy just to not call in. And to just, you know, go on with my life and forget it. And there. I can get relief from that torture temporarily. Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to say to myself, or somebody says to me, you know what? Yeah, today it's too soon. Just call in next week. You'll do better then. You'll be more relaxed. And then the next week comes around. And then it kind of just trips away over time. So it was never like this. Having to confront it, but just, like I said, letting it drift away.
And then without realizing it, our lives are back under the control of those voices that hate us.
Yeah. So what I wanted to, what I thought I'd talk about was flying back. So I live down here in San Diego. And a couple of things happened on the plane, and so I thought I'd talk about that.
Great.
The first is I got on my my little book that we write in. I was looking at my notes, and this is literally on a flight back. And it's funny because I haven't written poetry, and but I just wrote something. Just came to me, and I just wrote it down. So I'd like to read that.
Great.
It is called Flying Home. 1 week. 1 week ago, I was on this plane going the other way. Or was I? Someone was on this plane. I'm filled with compassion for him, gratitude to him, and a promise for him. I have compassion for all of his suffering, so much pain. I have incredible gratitude for his earnest, sincere, heartfelt perseverance in looking for his true self. My promise is that I will never, ever, ever abandon him. 1 week, a lifetime.
Wow. Goosebumps.
The difference, like I said, between flying up and flying back, just
wow.
Just
completely different, completely transformed. And you know, it's that place that we talk about at the end of the retreat where I can't remember if Sherry said this when we were, you know, the last night of the retreat, but she often does, of, you know, just nothing has changed. Let's just all make sure we get that. Like, there's no magic wand has happened here. No, our lives are not now going to all be rosy and everything's going to go my way. And none of that has changed, but our relationship with it has completely changed.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And just to be filled with that in the sense of the presence is wonderful.
Yeah. And Bob, have you recorded that poem yet?
I have not. You know, that it would not have occurred to me yet. I'm glad you suggested that. I will absolutely do that. Oh, that's wonderful.
And the reason I think of it is that lovely line of, I think you said, I will not abandon him. And the thing that we know is that he will feel abandoned, or the language gets so tricky, right?
In other words, there will
be times where that heartfelt connection between that practitioner and that dear, sweet human and that mentor is obscured, is, you know, covered over, is whatever. There will be times like that, but to have that poem recorded for him to listen to, so that what we begin to get in the marrow of our bones, that even though it can feel like that sometimes, he is never abandoned. Never abandoned.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that happened, so the flight, you know, went on, we landed, and I was eager to go meet the people who were going to meet me at the airport. And so the plane stopped, and then somebody from a row or two by, I don't know how far back, walked up, right? They got out, and they walked up the aisle past my seat. So it's somebody from behind me going to get it off in front of me. And I looked, and I said, oh, look, there's this person, and she shouldn't be there, and she's attractive, so she's probably used to getting her way, and blah, blah, blah. And then, then she looked back and I thought, oh, you know, she's meeting somebody, so she's not going anywhere. Maybe she has to go to the bathroom. Well, you know, I can understand that. And then, or maybe this, right? And then I saw myself saying, all that's happened is this person walked 3 feet and I have all this judgment of, you know, do they have a good reason that's acceptable to me? What is the reason? What kind of a person are they? Right. And then I caught it pretty quickly, but it was striking how quickly it can go back and forth like that.
Absolutely. And that is awareness practice in action, what you're describing. I mean, I project that's why Sherry will often say, I think quoting her teacher, no reason to be bored. Because what we realize is when we're paying attention, there is something going on. Ego is up to something in every millisecond. It's just making meaning, talking to us, making this good, bad, right, wrong, you know, duality. We talked about that on the retreat, right? It's just plugging everything into, just weaving this web, not because it cares, right, but only because it's just working it around to the angle that will eventually end up in suffering for us. That's all.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. Because if I look at this, I mean, the person was there. It realistically made no difference whatsoever.
Mm-mm.
And but then I could, if I was to continue to listen, I'd get all worked up about it, and then I get into, well, what am I going to do? Am I going to say something? Am I not going to say something? Am I just going to hear and suffer? Go complain to people about it, right? Over nothing.
Over nothing. And then, of course, very likely, then it's you're going to get judged. I mean, come on, Bob. You just came back from a retreat, and you can't even just because of this one, right? I mean, it just piles on with whatever we'll believe. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yet, because you were there to see it, it didn't get to do that. It didn't have the ability to finish its job.
And I find myself laughing at the voices after I catch them.
Yeah.
Because it's so silly, but then if you're not watching, it's not silly at all. It's completely serious.
Yeah.
And
it's so
important.
Serious. It's
yeah.
so important. It's so horrible. It's so terrible. It's so she's awful. I'm awful.
Yeah.
But when you see it, it is. It really is funny. And laughing at them, and they may hate that, right? The voices cannot stand to be laughed at. Yeah. Oh, I love it. And all of that, Bob, that the whole Sangha listening to this would not have had the benefit of hearing all those things had you, again, that conversation of, well, no, I mean, you don't really need to. I mean, you're just going to make a fool out of yourself. If you hadn't been there for that conversation and been able to be present to make the choice to call anyway, all of that would not have been available to all of us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like you were talking about at the end of the retreat, that it's so important for practice, for us to show up to practice.
That's right. That's right, that each of us taking responsibility for our own practice, which allows, in this case, Bob to show up, or Michael to show up, or Jen to show up, with whatever unique gifts come through each of us, it's like by doing our own practice, we're stewarding that gift being available to the whole Sangha and all of life.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as opposed to hiding it or burying it.
As opposed to it being hidden or buried. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks so much, and thank you again for the retreat.
Oh, you're most welcome. Stay in touch. Be close.
And we'll do. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks. Castro.
Castro.
Thanks for joining us, Bob. Jen, what dropped in at the end there at that conversation, that quote about hiding our light under a bushel or something like that? It seems like we're practicing getting rid of the bushel, which is very fun.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny, Michael, because that song, which I think is like a kid's kind of Christian song, very popular in Africa. And so I love it because when you say that, I just get this image of a sea of faces, little kids singing that song at the point where it's, you know, hide it under a bushel, no! And they all put their finger in the air, you know, like, no! And so it's just that, oh, it's so sweet to think, like, no way, we're not going to hide that, you know? We want to put it forward.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Great. And we have another caller, Jen.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Well, hi, Jen. Hi, Michael. This is Kim calling from Vashon.
Hi, Kim.
I am super excited to be here, and I have to turn the meat down on the stove over here really quick because I'm in the middle of cooking, and there, it's done. And I am having a very huge opportunity, as Sherry was talking about on the show earlier today, and I just need some guidance because there's a lot of resistance, and it's just really tough. It's a rough situation. I have a friend from childhood who is dying right now, and I have not seen her in 8 years, although we've kept in very good phone contact. And I'm just feeling a lot of guilt. I'm going to go see her at the end of the month. And, you know, she has said, well, I hope your ticket is refundable because I don't know if I'll be alive. Mm. And, you know, I'm just, it's just really, really tough. And conditioning comes in at every, you know, tiny crevice with, you know, you're a terrible person, you're a bad friend, why didn't you go see her, you know, why can't you go right now, why can't you drop everything and go right now, and it's just, there's a lot in it.
And Kim, have you kind of, well, first of all, have you recorded about it?
Yes, I've done some two-handed recording.
Great. And I don't know if that's maybe come up in doing the two-handed recordings, but just that, to me, when there are those really challenging places, and when in those challenging places, we're so vulnerable to the voices, you know, it's just so horrible, isn't it, that at the time that we need the most support, that's where the voices come at us the strongest. And just that place of, gosh, how would I be with a close friend, a loved one, one of my children, whoever, if they were in this situation? Would I be saying anything remotely like that to them?
That's a really good angle. The other thing that's going on, and I appreciate that, and I will do some more recording around that. The other thing that is going on for me, which is really interesting to see, is that there's a part of me that is really terrified to go see her.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to go. And that's not me. I realize that's not me. That's conditioning because the authentic person loves her and wants to see her, but I'm just afraid. I'm afraid.
And do you have a sense of afraid of?
Well, there's a lot, you know, yes, I have a sense I'm afraid because, you know, I could be there too. I could be where she is also easily. And so it puts that in my face. And there's that. And just also conditioning is telling me how bad hospitals are because I've spent a lot of time in hospitals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a huge workshop. And it's bringing up things for you that in our day-to-day life, you know, mostly, you know, I mean, sure, we all know we're going to die, right? But it's really not something that we're paying attention to on a day-by-day basis. And so having this in your life is really bringing that up for you. And also the specific circumstance, having to spend time in the hospital, is also bringing up kind of, oh, God, what's that going to be like?
Yeah, and I know from my own experience of having been in the hospital and all this that actually there are wonderful people that you can meet in the hospital, and it's it can be a very amazing experience. And so I know that all of this, all of this voice, all of this conversation is conditioning, and yet it's so compelling, and it just feels fraught, and, you know, there's the loudest voices. I don't want to go. I just don't want to go.
And it reminds me of what Bob was saying a minute ago, right? That's an equivalent thing, it sounds like, much more sort of small stakes kind of a situation, but basically, no, I don't want to call in. I don't want to call in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, because that's going to be too whatever, right? In that case, it was, well, you're going to make a fool of yourself, and people are going to say such and such. And that's what the voice is always doing to us, isn't it? Is it's telling us what's going to happen, and guess what? It's going to be bad. And you know what? Yes, you're not going to be adequate to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's trying to talk us out of, basically, you know, we've been talking a lot in practice about participating. So it's trying to talk us out of participating in our lives.
Yes, and then so, what the... Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, please.
And then the voice comes in and says, well, I'm happy to participate in every other place in my life, but not here.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
This I don't want to participate in. And I know, you know, I.
Well, and I wonder if there's a place, again, that's kind of a two-handed reporting place, isn't it, right, mm-hmm. where that person who, quote, doesn't want to participate, she doesn't want to do this,
mm-hmm.
that she gets to hold that recorder in the right hand and mm-hmm. and uncensored. I think that's the big thing. I was just talking to a mm-hmm. couple of people recently about that, how critical mm-hmm. that uncensored piece of it is, right? Because so mm-hmm. often, you know, you have a very well-established practice, and those of us who do have a well-established practice, I project sometimes that's the most challenging part, is to let mm-hmm. ourselves speak uncensored about it, because there's this sense of like, well, I'm afraid. Well, but I know that's just the voices, you know, it's
mm-hmm.
ego's afraid. Okay, well, maybe mm-hmm. it is ego who's afraid. But how about I put that recorder in the right hand and let myself have just the flat-out, uncensored, bare-bones experience that I'm having? I'm afraid. It freaks me out. I don't want to be in the hospital with her. I feel guilty, like I should have gone before. And why am I not going tomorrow morning? I mean, I blah, blah, blah. All of it, mm-hmm. just all of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even
mm-hmm.
the stuff that makes her the wrong person, or that she shouldn't be feeling that way, or she shouldn't think mm-hmm. that, or, you know, whatever it is, because...
Oh, there's some zingers there. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. there's some zingers. And I'll tell you my experience with it, Kim, is that the more frank we're able to be in that side of the recording, the larger the opening for the compassion, for the mentor mm-hmm. to come in. Because then the mentor has the whole thing, all of it, to work with. It's just like mm-hmm. a good friend. If a good friend is just kind of, this phrase we often use, spilling their guts, right, and just telling you everything mm-hmm. that's going on, so often our reaction is, oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so mm-hmm. sorry. And then from that place, we can really be a support. You know, not trying to fix anything, not trying to change it for her, because I project if we had a friend who was going to visit someone they love dearly who is dying, we probably are not going to talk them out of doing it, right? What we're going to do is offer the support that she needs in going into what is a really challenging situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, that is so helpful. Thank you. That is so helpful. I'm so grateful. Yeah.
And just that, to me, it's that place. I was looking at something completely different content, but sort of that place, Kim, of where when it is really hard, oh, boy, that's a cue to just be as kind and gentle and patient and compassionate with our human as we can possibly mm-hmm. be. You know, she's in a really hard time. I want to be really kind with her. I want to be mm-hmm. really present to her.
That's a good reminder.
Yeah.
Well, I bought a plane ticket today. So, you know, despite the voices, I bought a plane ticket and, you know, so I'm going forward and I so appreciate
this guidance. Exactly. Step by step. Step by step. Yep.
Step by step.
With her all the way. Yeah. And let us know. Let us keep us posted. Stay close. Yep.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank
you, Michael. Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Kim. I really appreciated that conversation, Jen. And what landed particularly for me was the uncensored part of the two-handed recording.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about, in some ways, that the skills that I developed through practice to help with communication, perhaps with other people, that could be framed as censored or restrained or restraint in religious observances.
Mm-hmm.
And yet
mm-hmm.
the recorder has no feelings or no, you know, I can't hurt the recorder's feelings. It doesn't have a problem with profanity or any color in the language. And as you said, when it's all out there, then the mentor has the opportunity to work with all of it. And that just seems so critical.
That is such a good point, Michael. Was it Alan Watts who said everything goes inside the bag of skin?
Mm, yes.
Right? So in other words, because that's such a good point. You know, other conditioned human beings are going to take things personally, and they're going to get their feelings hurt, and, you know, it's fine. I mean, there's, we can practice with all of that too, but it, in a hurry, it gets pretty messy, right? But in terms of on that record, that reporter is not going to take it personally. It just isn't ever, you know?
Yes.
And that's a huge gift.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes, it is. Definitely. Wonderful. And Jen, we're going to break here and hear from our event awareness coaching program, and then we'll be back to talk with more callers.
Okay, great. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
Build compassionate discipline into your life with Zen Awareness Coaching. Weekly calls and email check-ins provide support and accountability for waking up and ending suffering. Coaching assists us to recognize conditioned patterns and direct attention to what we want for our lives instead. If you have ever attended a There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat, Zen Awareness Coaching is for you. To request a coach, email zenawarenesscoach@livingcompassion.org. Get a Zen Awareness Coach and choose to make a change for good for your practice and your life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Jen, we have another caller here.
Okay, great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Well, hi, Michael. Hi, Jen. It's Todd calling from Kelowna, British Columbia, Canada.
Hey, Todd.
Hi, Todd.
Can you hear me okay?
Can hear you perfectly.
Oh, great, great. I'm on a different computer. I appreciate that. Well, all the conversations with Sangha and the guides and the radio shows and this show, just what keeps coming up for me is heroic and courageous for all. Wow. Deeply inspired.
Yeah. Heroic and courageous. Amen. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, always. And then when we hit those hard times and we hit the big times and we, you know, or even those places where Bob was describing where we just, we're catching things on that minute level. Boy, we realize this is big what we're doing. I mean, this is like,
just big.
Wow.
I've been looking at something recently. I was looking to see if you could offer some maybe of your personal experiences or encouragement and guidance along the lines of how out in the world and maybe I'll start with what I heard Sherry, I believe I heard Sherry say about it, is that when I wear my beads, my precept beads, all the time. I wear them all the time, and I wear them on the outside. And I get asked about the beads.
Not tucked under your.
There you go.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Or in my duffel bag or wherever. Right.
I
wear them.
High. I just. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right. Yeah. They're on my dresser when I leave the house. Or sort of. But I wear them, and I get asked about them, and then I get asked about practice, and I think here's the thing. There's a couple things. One is, I believe Sherry said that we don't proselytize about our practice. And I didn't even know the definition of proselytize. And I looked it up, and it's very intriguing for me because there's a couple things that came in. It's like bring into the fold or convert. And the last two in the definition were recruit or brainwash. And that's kind of what egocentric karma conditioning self-hate is doing to us. Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. Yeah.
All the time.
And again,
all the time.
I think both Bob and Kim pointed at it, right? Because they're reporting on what the voices are saying to them. So the conversation that they're in with conditioned mind, that's literally a brainwashing system.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. And so people ask me about practice. First they ask me about the beads, and I give it. It's a pretty simple explanation that they're It's a Zen Buddhist rosary, and that it's part of our daily sitting practice, or my daily sitting practice that I've established through this practice, where each bead represents a line of a daily recollection that we recite to ourselves during the first hit of the day. And that kind of leads then into further questions of my about the practice. And then I stumble because I think what is happening, or I think experientially, then egocentric karmic self-hate has a lot of opinions about it.
Mm-hmm.
How it should be presented, how not to proselytize, how not to convert, how to present it in a way, because Sherry has used some interesting language about this, about how if ego gets a hold of that,
mm-hmm.
it, as you said, it can get messy really quickly.
If ego gets a hold of?
Of me trying to share practice to someone who is not, they don't have any exposure to Zen Buddhism or any exposure to our practice. Ego gets a hold of that explanation, I noticed it can get messy really quick. And I was just wondering what your guidance or encouragements might be when I can offer my experience of practice to others that have no grounding in it whatsoever. What would you offer?
Well, there's so many things about it, Todd, and I love your approach, your inquiry to it, and I would love to hear you follow up and call, you know, an open air when Sherry's facilitating to hear what you have to say. But one thing so for me, I actually usually just end with, oh, thank you, it's a Buddhist rosary. And I actually almost never have anyone ask me a follow-up question.
Okay. Yeah.
So I don't know if go ahead.
Mm-hmm. What dropped in for me when that was offered was it just seemed so clean.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because their curiosity was such, and then it sounded like to me you satisfied the curiosity and then life went on.
Yeah, and I project, I mean, I don't even know what percent, a very high percentage of people, you know, they're not actually really interested, which is completely fine.
yeah, right? I get you. Thank you.
They actually really do like the beads and they were hoping to find out where I got them and then that conversation's over because they can't actually go online and buy them.
Nope,
or,
that's right.
You know,
Amazon
and,
Plus.
And
yeah.
you know, exactly. And actually, it's very similar, Todd, to the conversation you probably remember we have at the end of retreats, and we just had it on Saturday, and then there's nothing else to retreat. Exactly. So, you know, what happens when people ask me about my experience? And where I'll often go with that is, you know, if someone truly is interested, and you can tell, you know, you can tell, because it's that person where I say, oh, thank you. You know, they say, God, I really like your beads. And I say, well, thank you. That's the Buddhist rosary. And as I say, most people then go on and, you know, on to the next thing. But the person who says, oh, wow, you know what? I've been fascinated by Zen, you know, and all. Oh, really? And then they'll say, yeah, because da-da-da-da-da. And I'll just basically reflect, right?
Yes,
and
sure.
If the conversation continues, what I'll end up saying is, well, this practice really has been very transformational for me. That the website is livingcompassion.org.
Oh, beautiful. Wow. Yeah.
You know, so it's that place where I'm not hiding.
Yeah.
Right?
Nope.
And
nope.
So, but I'm putting out the, you know, that's how I got started, right? And
yes.
So,
yes.
Through the website, because there was no thing as a website
when
I got started. But through the book, through my own direct experience. And I think, Todd, what you're intuiting is that's the only way. I mean, the only way anyone has a true shot at starting on a path like this is through their own direct experience.
Absolutely. And mine was I was house sitting for a friend in Southern California. And she said, there's a little library. She was into many forms of Buddhism, not just specifically our practice in Zen. She goes, here's a whole library of books. I'm gone for 3 days taking care of the house and dogs. And she said, if you're interested, grab any book you want. This I'm getting chills just telling this little story. I picked a book off the shelf of maybe 300 books, and it was There's Nothing Wrong With You by Sherry Huber.
Oh, my God. I'm sharing your chills.
Wow. And I read
and
it and signed
it
for the retreat.
That's it.
Yeah.
Is that...
Yeah.
Every one of us has that story in some form.
Yeah.
And what that tells us is if we need to find this practice, we find it.
Right. Right. Or did it find me?
Right.
That's another question.
I was just going to say, or it finds us, right?
Unless it finds us. Oh, this has been really helpful, Jen. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Yeah. It's given me a lot to look at.
There is a lot to look at. So I really do mean it, Todd. I think it would be, as you continue to explore it, I do think it would be really fun to hear, because there's a perspective that the guide brings to it, you know?
Yeah, I know.
That's really, you know, I don't know, important. And
very important. Great. Okay, I'll keep it in my awareness, and next time I get called on in open air, it's something I'd like to bring up again, because I agree with you. It's something that maybe for all of Sangha and all of us in practice is worth exploring and going in deeper, because we're out in the world, you know?
Exactly. We are out in the world.
And we're representatives as well. As Sherry's often said, we represent practice, and how do we represent practice is another place to look. How do we?
That's exactly right, you know? Because, you know, the fact that you, in this case, wear a rosary, which shows how dedicated you are to waking up and ending suffering, that's a very big statement, and one that we wouldn't want someone to miss if they were someone who needed to see that that it was possible to dedicate a life to that.
Yeah, that's really big too. That's big.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
All right.
Deep gassho and gratitude. Yeah.
Deep gassho. Go happy.
Bye-bye. Go happy. I will.
Okay, good.
Thanks for joining us, Todd. I enjoyed that conversation also, Jen, and what dropped in is something that I think I heard at one point, you know, if somebody asked me about practice or Zen, or is to say less rather than more. And that has really landed with me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I like your idea about the, we have a website, and it's livingcompassion.org.
I mean, because there is so much that's been put into that website. That website is practice, right? So we don't.
Yeah.
That's what makes it really so relaxing. Is that Sherry and now Ashwini have written, I don't even know how many books now, 30 something books, and that website. I mean, the time and attention and care that has been put into that website, such that that website is practice. You know, represents practice, is practice. Truly, someone can have a direct experience of practice simply by going there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And Jen, we have another caller here.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Chris calling from Boston.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Jen. Hey, Michael. So I wanted to call in about a process that I've realized I've been kind of run by, which is, I guess you could say, kind of frazzled or overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really compelling story, I suppose, with, like, for example, this. We just had a long weekend with the fourth. And I moved apartments on that weekend. And, I mean, as you know, I'm new in this area and had to move to it from a sublet to an actual more permanent place. And I noticed today just a really constant story in my head about, I guess the tone would kind of be like, it was a little bit put upon, the tone of, I got to work and there's a lot of projects that are kind of long-term that I need to sit with once in a while, and I'm still learning how to do that. And so then there was this kind of like put upon voice that was like, well, if I didn't have to move, it'd be, you know, like that kind of complaining put upon tone. And
if I didn't have to move, then...
Right, then, you know, then these wouldn't be an issue, these projects at work.
How does that go together?
Right. When I say it out loud, I also wonder.
Gotcha. Okay, I see. That's what you're also seeing. Wait a minute. I'm not seeing the tie in there, condition. Can you say more?
I think it has to do with, I think there's just this baseline assumption that, oh, you know, when life settles and when everything is, then I can finally do everything I need to do.
Right. Then I can finally do everything I need to do and I'll feel this certain way. But not now. I can't feel that way now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's such a scam, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, I think I've heard this. If you could count the mind moments that I've heard that in my life, I mean.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and it's that I won't at all even be able to come close to quoting it, but I think today's peace quote was by Sherry. And it's the second time in this call that it's come up for me, but I think that's basically what Sherry was pointing at is, you know, we just have to get it. But that conversation is going to say the same thing. Mm. It is. That's just what it's going to do. And we just have to get exit, right? And not participate, because that conversation is always going to hold that carrot out in front of us. And it's never going to happen. Now, at least in my experience, every now and then it's going to happen for a fleeting moment, enough so that it feels like, ooh, it's possible. You know, and so we keep going. Oh, just come on, Chris, come on. Just, okay, let's get the apartment stuff done. Da, 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 da. And then if I can't do that, then there's that put upon, like, geez, I mean, if this weren't happening, then I'd be able to get, you know, do these projects and it would be okay and everything would be work out, but no, I have to move the apartment. And, oh.
Right. And it's interesting because now that you say that, what drops in for me is how the really exhausting thing going on, and I know this on an intellectual level, but I think I just saw it in my bones kind of way, but that it's really exhausting to be in that conversation.
Oh my gosh. We should just, yes, that is one of the most significant awarenesses that we all can have over and over and over. Mm-hmm. That is so huge. Yep. Not to give anything away, but as I say, we just finished a There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat. And that's something we really get in that retreat is it feels like it's my relationship or it's my job, it's my kids. It's where I'm living. It's what's going on with my parents. It's my whatever. That's what's creating the stress, the overwhelm, the fatigue, the anger, the fill in the blank. But what it actually is the conversation.
And it's interesting. Yeah, and it's so, I mean, what I need to underline as well for me is what you said, the beginning of that, which was we realize this over and over and over and over.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's just how it goes. I was listening to my recordings on Shuffle recently, and I heard a reading from Sweet Zen. Have you ever read that book of Sherry's? It's an old one, but really good. I absolutely love it. A woman named Sarah Jenkins did a number of books where she essentially brought together a number of different talks. I think they were from, you know, retreats and that sort of thing. And she put them together into these short readings. And in this one, Sherry's talking about there is no magic bullet. There's no magic thing that's going to happen and change everything.
Mm-hmm.
And how helpful it is to get that. Because once we get that, what we realize is, I think what you're saying is, oh, this is truly a practice. And conditioning is not going to stop trying to bamboozle me with the same things. Mm-hmm. And so I get to keep remembering this over and, oh, yeah, it's the conversation in the head. That's right. And instead of going to, I mean, really? I mean, how many times have you had that realization, Chris? I mean, come on. You can't, why? But instead, every time it's like, oh, right, that is so helpful to remember that.
That is such an important, I mean, I need to underline that 100 times because
yeah.
I've even heard that, like I've heard that come out of my mouth before. Just that I heard it come out of my mouth at work today. I had to give a presentation to some families that were visiting the campus, and I talked about just that attitude of practice that I see at the college that I'm working at, and how it's not about arriving somewhere and just coasting, and that wouldn't be desirable anyway. Right? That's such the subtle bamboozle is, okay, you'll get to coast.
Exactly. And that's somehow held out as what I want. Which is the image, I think, was it this morning on the radio show where Sherry was talking about that place where we're supposed to get talked into kind of, oh, just curling up on the couch because my life is so hard and things are so overwhelming. And but I don't want to do that. You know, I have this whole glorious life. I want to participate. So why would I ever want to get to a place where I'm finished and then do what? Sit on the couch? No thanks.
Mm-hmm. It's like what we were saying a couple days ago about the fitness, the fitness metaphor of, it's not like you work out once and you go, I'm healthy now, and then you're done. It's a continuous deepening.
Exactly. Yep. And just one other thing about that particular realization that I find so helpful is that if it really were the relationship, the job, the apartment, the whatever, mm-hmm. that was upon which my well-being was dependent,
mm-hmm.
I would be in a world of hurt because I have zero control over those things, right? I mean, yes, I can choose which job I have and I can choose what apartment, but all kinds of things are going to happen in those arenas of my life that I have no control over.
Mm-hmm.
But the conversation inside my head, although, as we were talking about with Bob to start with, I have, as far as I can tell, no control over that either. I do have so much influence to practice how I am with it.
Mm-hmm.
And to direct my attention away from it.
And it's interesting because when I said that I said that those words in a presentation today, there was such a resonance in the room. I mean, everyone was nodding when I said that. And I'm like, people, like, this is like, there's some truth to this that people hear it and recognize.
Exactly. Because we know it as our experience.
Mm-hmm. And
you know, I don't know if I can say how, Chris, but in some ways it sort of takes us back to the conversation we had with Todd, because I project you doing those presentations and being able to articulate things like that is coming from the fact that you're waking up. And as we're waking up, we're touching into what's actually so. And then that becomes our experience and it informs everything we do. So there you are in your job doing a presentation. And you have that experience, and so you're coming from that place. And even if people have no awareness practice, they recognize it. They recognize the truth of it.
Which I think is also what drew me to even ever call into this radio show in the first place around a year ago when I think I heard a podcast interview that Sherry was on. And I had no idea what she was talking about. I mean, I was like, one process doesn't lead to another. What does that mean? But there was a recognition that drew me in, and I followed that, and here we are.
Wow. It's like God's story of the book on the bookshelf among the 300 books, right? Mm-hmm. Among all of the podcasts that should have come across your awareness, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I loved hearing that about the bookshelf. I mean, I think all of us can relate in some way to that.
Absolutely. Yep. As Ashwini says, we're seeking and we're also being sought.
it really does. It's like the chicken and the egg, or the pecking and the egg.
Exactly. Yep. So good. Well, thank you. Thanks for calling in and offering that. It's very helpful.
And thank you. I think conditioning wanted a magic bullet answer, and I'm so glad that that's not what happened in this conversation.
Exactly. The magic bullet is that there isn't one.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Jen.
Yeah. Thank you, Chris. Take good care.
Thank you. And thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Thanks, Chris. And Jen, I think we can get one more caller in here. So I'm going to bring that caller on.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Emily from Seattle.
Hey, Emily.
Emily.
Hi. Well, I appreciated the first call, which I heard you describing my situation perfectly. I was planning to call in and then found myself relaxing on the couch and feeling so like, oh, I'm safe. I can relax. And
I'll call in another time.
Yeah, it was exactly that. And I just popped up and came outside, and I hope it's not too noisy out here. But I wanted to call in because it seemed like a theme today, like those challenging situations, like seeing them as positive somehow. And I can't seem to fit in, like my son's like bad behavior. I don't know what to call it, but like it's behavior that like anyone would look at and say that's terrible behavior. Mm-hmm. It might be a problem too, or something that needs to be addressed and some solutions found. But the other thing is just, I just can't seem to find that I know there's unconditional love there. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I just can't wrap that around the situation. I'm just yesterday I was just in hate. And I was just like seeing the hate grow and grow and grow. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I heard that conversation this morning and I thought, how that just seems impossible to bring that into some kind of love.
It seems impossible to bring the situation that's happening with your son into that unconditional love.
To bring that into unconditional love and acceptance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And your reactions to it, so that hate that comes up, that intense reaction to the situation, do you feel like that's been brought into unconditional love?
No, that goes right into self-hate. Hard too. Yeah.
So that seems like, you know, sometimes the image we use is we can't ask a starving child to share her food. So if we start with Emily's, what's going on internally for Emily around all of it is so harshly judged.
Mm-hmm.
And she's criticized, and she's, you know, all those things. I can only imagine what the voices do with that.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the case for her, where in the world would she come up with unconditional love for the rest of the situation?
Yeah, Yeah, that makes sense. So finding that love, I mean, I've worked with this some, like, okay, there's the hate that comes just flashing up. And so, okay, a sign that I need unconditional love and acceptance.
Mm-hmm. Which is really challenging to do, isn't it? Because
yeah.
If there's a strong feeling, I mean, I'll just project from my own experience. If there's a strong feeling of hate coming up, especially when it's around a relationship that I care a lot about, right?
Yeah.
Then I'm going to get really harshly criticized. And to bring unconditional love to that is very challenging to do because it feels so, quote, wrong.
Yeah, yeah. What can I do in that? It already seems like it already happens. Like it's already too late. Like I already did something wrong. I failed at it. I had mean thoughts or I felt hate.
Yeah. Right. So it's either I did something or even just thought about it. I shouldn't have even had those thoughts.
Yeah.
Right. That makes
me
the wrong person.
Yeah, I'm a bad person. I'm terrible.
Yep. And I'm guessing you said you've done some recording around it.
Yeah. I've looked at this a lot. It's a big one for me.
And you've done the two-handed recording with it.
Yeah.
And do you feel like you've done the uncensored thing we were talking about earlier?
The what sent? What did you say?
The uncensored. Have you really let her, the person who's really, really struggling, do you feel like she's been able to say whatever she's feeling about it uncensored in that right hand?
Yeah, I think at times, yeah, I could probably revisit that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it requires, stepping away in that critical moment, maybe.
Yes, well, and in that critical moment, I don't know if you've, heard this sort of piece of it, but what we often talk about is, in that, when we're in the fire, when we're in the face of just some huge thing, we're just getting through it. We're just doing whatever we can to get through it, right? So, when she's in the middle of it, your son is right with you and there's, it's going on and you're, whatever it is. I mean, that's a survival moment, right? We're just doing the best,
I guess so.
Getting through it, right? And then we go do the recording. Because to expect ourselves, I mean, that's just another setup for self-hate. To expect ourselves in the most challenging thing in our lives, to be so whatever, right? Conditioning would paint it as centered and gracious and patient and calm and, right? I mean, it's just stupid. It's such a setup. It's these standards that are held out only so that we'll fail and be wide open to that evil self-hatred. But instead, if we get it, it's sort of what we were looking at with Chris. If we get it, of course that's going to happen. I mean, this is the most challenging thing I work with in my life. So absolutely. I mean, it's probably going to happen every day. I mean, it's summer vacation. So I'm guessing that brings all kinds of dynamics with it, right? So let's just say, you can even like torture conditioning and play with that thought of it. Well, how many times do you think it'll happen today? Well, I think it'll happen, four times. Oh, it only happened twice. Look at that. There are all kinds of ways you can play with it in the heat of it, but it's after, or pretty soon what we get to is, I'm going to need daily support. So before it even happens, I'm in there talking to her and saying, hey, I know you're doing the best you can. However it goes today, that's completely all right. I'm right here with you. Hey, let me know at the end of the day. I really want to know how it went. She's in a hard situation. And so we want to bring her a ton of support.
Yeah, getting prepared for it a little bit.
Exactly. And then however it goes, that's how it went, that's fine. And then we get to debrief afterwards with my coach who loves me so much, so unconditionally loves me, and is right there to assist me with anything, right? It's that I love you exactly the way you are, and I want to help you be however you want to be. Oh, you would like to, you know, be more whatever it is, patient or however with your son. Great, I'm here to help you with that. But I don't have any conditions on you have to be X kind of a mother in order for me to love you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that sounds really good.
Yeah, and then stay in touch because it is. It's a huge okay. workshop. I project for a lot of parents at this time of year. You know, it's ramped
yeah,
up.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah, I have to ramp it up too.
Exactly. We got to turn the compassion volume way up. Yeah, for everyone involved. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank
Great
you,
to
Emily.
Talk.
Yeah. Nice to hear your voice. Take good care.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Emily. Jen, I think that's a great way to end the show by turning the compassion volume way up.
The compassion volume way up. Yep.
Yeah. So thank you so much for being here tonight. It was a great show.
Thank you, Michael.
And,
pleasure.
Go happy, and don't forget to treasure yourself.
Yep. Amen. Thanks, Michael. Thanks, everyone.
Okay. Thanks, everyone.
Good
Thanks,
night.
Jen. Good night.
Bye-bye.